Greeks and Italians arriving after the war weren't the first to play soccer in Australia. There's evidence that at least as early as the 1870s, football matches were being played out here under the British Association rule that the ball not be handled nor carried. Historian of the game, Ian Syson, writes that soccer in Australia has boomed a number of times in the last century or so. Yet, for all of the spikes of interest in the game, it's always receded into the background just when success seemed close at hand. Well, there is a mighty spike of interest now, and Dr. Syson, retired academic, author of The Game That Never Happened, The Vanishing History of Soccer in Australia, joins me to discuss the history of the game. Ian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good evening, David. That was very eloquent and accurate, what you said in your introduction there.
What I aim for at all times. Hey, Ian, what is the best evidence for the earliest soccer match on the continent?
The undisputed earliest evidence is 1875, and it was a game that was played at a lunatic asylum, as they called it back then, in Goodna in Ipswich, near Brisbane. It was described as being, you know, the way you described it, no hands, kicking off the ground only. And the corroborating evidence that I found for that game was in an Australian rules journal down here, where they had a little asterisk next to that game. They tried to document all the games in Australia, and it said asterisk association rules. And so that sort of confirmed it. That triangulated the assertion. But there are many other games that are still up for investigation, that are still under a shadow, under a kind of doubt.
Yeah, yeah. Who brought the game to Australia? Who was playing it?
The people back then conceived of four separate codes of football. You know, soccer, Australian rules, rugby. Well, it's three, but there's only three at the time. They didn't really conceive of football that way. Football was football. The point of the game was to get the ball between the posts.
Could you just turn up at the field and decide what the rules would be? Oh, look, we're going to play today.
That's often what happened. I think in Melbourne, and that's my best knowledge is of Melbourne. In Melbourne, the first games were played very much in a free-for-all rules. That was very much like each of the codes. What's celebrated as the first game of Australian rules at Yarra Park could have led to any game. The rules were so little, so few, and so vague.
Maybe you turned up at the ground and looked at the condition of the ground, and the harder the ground, the more likely you were to play soccer.
I think that's possibly the case. And again, it wasn't like there was this game called soccer that was available for them to play. It was football, and it was football that involved getting the ball to one end of the ground. And through the goalposts. It was like soccer anyway, the original Australian rules games.
But now, look, I want to ask you about the First World War and your search for the soccer-playing Anzacs. Now, what's the point of identifying which soldiers were ever involved in a soccer game?
When I first started researching the game around the late 2000s, I found this photo of the Irimpel soccer team. And unlike a lot of photos, it had names below them. So that was really handy. But this photo also had asterisks next to some of the players. And below the photo, it said, killed in the First World War. And there were five of them. I thought, my goodness, that's a devastating story. And how comes I don't know about it? How comes nobody seems to know about it? So I thought, well, maybe there's more of it. And I did indeed find so many more. So I thought, let's do a database, start with a database and try to list all the players who were playing and then who signed up. And then the inevitable question is, were they killed?
Yep. Well, tell us the story of the Lowe family brothers.
The Lowe, they were from Scotland, and there was four brothers. They all joined up. The first one was the youngest, and he went to Queensland to join up. He ended up being killed at Gallipoli. The three other brothers all end up serving, and the last one who wasn't going to go, you know, that tradition of one brother staying behind?
Yep.
He decided to go and avenge Huey's death, and he made it back. The interesting thing about this family and the way it relates to your previous question is that when one of them died sort of natural causes in 1927, there was no acknowledgement in the St. Kilda paper by the club of the death. There was no funeral notice. There was no memoriam notice. And I'm thinking that's kind of weird. But again, it's the game is falling apart in 1927. You know, most other sports and sports clubs would have been celebrating their servicemen.
There was no voice.
He was a Victorian representative as well. He played for Victoria and there was nothing.
How many soccer-playing Anzacs have you identified so far?
Well, we're still working in the realm of not so much guesswork as estimation. We figured that there were about 6,000 or 7,000 players in Australia before the war. And so we were working on a 70% enlistment rate because soccer players were very loyalist. A lot of them were English and Scottish,
yeah,
or from English and Scottish families. So we're looking at around 5,000. And at the moment we have 820 on the website, which for those interested is socceranzacs.com.au.
Are you going to be arguing that soccer is the real sport of the Australian troops of the First World War?
No, certainly not. Wouldn't have the audacity to argue that. However, what I would argue is that it's equivalent. It was as popular as all of the other codes. Interestingly, rugby league wasn't very popular in the battalions, but soccer and Australian rules were in equal number.
A common theme of your work is Aberdeen. And there is somebody whose name interests me a great deal, Sandy Marr of Aberdeen.
Well, he came to Western Australia. He was a goalkeeper. I think he was a bit of a chunky lad. He was a goalkeeper, but he was good enough to represent Western Australia. I think he might have even represented Australia a couple of times.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, and I want you to tell us the story of the soccer ashes.
When Australia resumed playing New Zealand after the war, they decided to establish a trophy. Now, the trophy was made of beautifully designed little casket from woods from both countries. Inside was a razor case that contained the ashes of cigars that were smoked at the smoke social after the game.
Right.
The razor case was at Gallipoli on the morning of the 25th. It was with a guy called William Fisher, who was on the first boat to land, and he describes the landing. And they were very fortunate because they were there first and nobody noticed. So the Turks weren't shooting at them. They were shooting at the next guys. And this razor case that he carried ashore makes it into the trophy. They soldered up the case and with the ashes inside. And so I think the game should be or could be very proud of the fact that it's actually a Gallipoli relic in that trophy.
But it was found after being lost for ages in somebody's garage.
It was lost in order to protect it. The guy who was running soccer in Australia then, he had possession of the ashes and saw the Europeans coming in to the game and starting to dominate it. And he, I think he put it to one side. He died a few years later and nobody knew what it was about. So they just left it there in his cupboard. And it wasn't until the son died that the grandson saw it and thought, what are we going to do with this? And he reported it to Football Australia. So it's a marvellous story.
Ian, in one sentence, is current passion for soccer going to die away again?
It's going to die away, but it's going to come back.
Ian, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Dr. Ian Sison, author of The Game That Never Happened, The Vanishing History of Soccer in Australia, who will, when he has all the material together, publish his book on the soccer Anzacs.